And so one form reasons from the fact of it being beginning of the universe, for the universe to exist, it needs a beginner. So this argument is known as the Kalam cosmological argument and was first developed by medieval Muslim philosophers. It has recently, in the last 20, 30 years or so, has been articulated by William Lane Craig. The Kalam argument is essentially a philosophical deductive proof. So this is not an induction, right? A probability argument. It's a deductive proof. And so Craig offers kind of a real simple form of this argument. It goes something like this. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe begins to exist, and therefore the universe has a cause. Mm-hmm. Now he goes on further and he has to show, you know, that this cause of the universe is really the Christian God. But his first step is just to get to this particular cause, that the universe has to have a cause because it is contingent, it had a beginning. And then he goes on from there.
Right, right. So out of the two steps, this is his first step here.
Yeah.
Craig argues that the first premise is intuitively obvious and should be accepted without trying to base it on something else. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. Think about something that has come up in your life, or the traffic accident, or the building. Well, that thing didn't just happen. It had a cause. There were people that built it. There was a car that crashed into it. Well, then what happened before that? Well, the car left the driveway and didn't look. The person got in the car. So we can go back and back and back until we come to this kind of first cause.
Yeah. Or we can even make it easier, right? Think of yourself, right? You didn't just always exist. There was a cause of your existence, your parents, and the cause of their existence, their parents, and so forth, right?
Right. Exactly. He then defends the second premise on both philosophical and scientific grounds. His principal argument here is a philosophical argument based on the improbability of a temporary infinity past. The universe began to exist. And I think it's a case for a creator with Lee Strobel that he's interviewed in there. And he does a masterful job of talking about the impossibility of an actual infinite. So I think he does it through hotel rooms, but I just like the idea of thinking, well, in order for us to get to this time and this place, infinity would have had to happen. Well, have we had infinity time? Well, no, but we're at this place right here and now. So therefore, an infinity time didn't have to happen. And you could go up from this point forward. Is there an end of time? Absolutely. Because if it goes off into infinity, we could never progress in time. Well, guess what? From the start of when I was starting this weird explanation, we've gotten to this point, the end, period. And look, yeah, we've traversed a time period. And so therefore, at least as far as time or the universe, it doesn't seem to be an actual infinite. So that's what he does here.
And Craig uses the hotel, you know, he calls it Hilbert's hotel based on a mathematician, you know, Hilbert. And yeah, he argues that it's incoherent, as you mentioned here, right, to posit an actual infinite that really exists, right? He says we can have a mathematical construct, right, of infinity,
right,
that we can use to make mathematical equations and that sort of thing. But an actual infinite in reality, he argues, is a incoherent concept.
Right. Right. So he says that the idea of time extending backwards infinitely, which what is known as an infinite regress, though an actual infinite series of moments or events is said to be inherently irrational. Therefore, an a priori philosophical grounds, this argument concludes that the universe must have had a beginning. So at least very step one, the universe has a beginning. Therefore, it seems like we have to go to our first point. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. And what is that cause? Who is that cause?
There you go. Right. And so although the Kalam argument as originally formulated is a deductive philosophical proof, Craig and other classical apologists supplement this rather abstract argument with the scientific evidence. Notice that the universe had a beginning. So not only does he use a philosophical proof, you know, that the impossibility of an actual infinite series of things, but also he uses scientific evidence, as he sees it, to show that the universe actually had a beginning, right? The argument here is based on the virtual consensus among all cosmologists that this beginning occurred in what is called the Big Bang, right? And so it has to be pointed out that even if a series of big bangs were postulated, for which there's really no evidence, it is clear that the universe would not oscillate through such a series from eternity. So there it is. He has a philosophical proof with regard to the impossibility of an actual infinite number of things or events and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And he has scientific evidence based on the cosmological position of the Big Bang to show that the universe began to exist. And of course, then, you know, logically, then it shows that if it began to exist, then it had to have a cause. Right. And so that's how he gets to his conclusion.
Right. Right. So he uses both space and time as pointing to a single point in time where the universe started. And so here, then, opponents have raised the variety of objections to these arguments. For example, they claim that reasoning from the finite, temporal, or contingent nature of all things in the universe to the conclusion that the universe itself is finite, temporal, and contingent commits the fallacy of composition. Well, the fallacy occurs when the attributes of the parts are attributed to the whole. For example, it would be a mistake to reason from the premise that all atoms are invisible to the conclusion that all physical objects, since they are comprised of atoms, should also be invisible. Well, how do I stop from myself from falling to the floor? Well, you know, unless if I'm the Flash and I can vibrate my atoms so that I can fall through it, that's not happening. So, you know, here, atoms just empty space. So how am I existing on this plane of existence? Well, okay. And you know, we should ask that for ghosts as well. How does ghosts glide across the floor if they're incorporeal? Well, all right. We'll have to wait for that one.
Or ask Casper himself.
Yeah, maybe he's just the ghost version of the Flash. Well, one answer to this objection is the arguments appealing to composition are often valid. For example, if all the pieces of a puzzle are red, well, the puzzle as a whole will also be red. So just because it might not apply doesn't mean it necessarily applies.
There you go. Right. So notice the idea here is this fallacy of composition is oftentimes overcome because it's true, right? That the things that make up the components of a whole thing are indeed the whole thing has the characteristics of those components, right? So it may not work with invisibility with regard to atoms, but it does work in other respects, as you've mentioned here with the, or as our authors mentioned here with the red pieces of puzzle, right? So sometimes the fallacy of composition is not a fallacy, right? It's the way things actually are. Another objection is that the argument begs the question by assuming what it sets out to prove, right? So the Kalam argument in particular is often criticized for reasoning from the inconceivability of an actual infinite series to its non-existence, right? We can't conceive of an actual infinite. And therefore, it doesn't exist, right? That's the claim here against the Kalam argument, right? It suggests that what seems inconceivable to the human mind is not necessarily exists. But the Kalam argument doesn't buy that, right? The defenders of this form of cosmological argument typically respond that the issue is not subjective inconceivability, right? What one person's mind can conceive, but objective irrationality, whether the concept is rationally coherent, right? So notice it's not, I can't conceive of it and therefore I, you know, it doesn't exist, right? That would be kind of a subjective, approach here. But the claim here is that it's objective irrationality. So let's take, for example, a four-sided triangle. Well, I can't conceive of a four-sided triangle, right? Why? Well, because it's rationally incoherent. Mm-hmm. So you can't conceive of it, right? And so that's the kind of thing that the Kalam, defenders of the Kalam cosmological argument attempt to show. It's not this subjective inconceivability. It's really rational incoherence with regard to an objective, irrational type of inconceivability.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.